Hey, everybody. Welcome to this episode of the Charlie Kirk Show. This is producer Andrew filling in for Charlie Kirk. Honored to be doing so. We forced him to take some time off. We demanded it. And he finally complied. We hope he's enjoying himself in an undisclosed location. Nevertheless, the show must go on. And today we covered, is Joe Biden raising your kids? Is he trying to divert your taxpayer money into creating more government bureaucracy and more indoctrination of the next generation? Facts of the matter are, he is. We talk about that. What is anti-racism? What's the real name of Ibram X. Kendi? I think that one's kind of fun. And we have a name on that professor at Cypress College in California that went off on police last week. She's been revealed. That and so much more. Guys, thank you for tuning in. If you want to support the show, please consider doing so at charliekirk.com/support. If you want to support Turning Point USA, we encourage that as well. TurningPointUSA.com. As always, thank you for joining us. We're excited to share this episode with you. As Charlie always says, buckle up. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
In our fast-paced world, it's tough to make reading a priority. At least it used to be. Use what I use to digest big ideas quickly at thinker.org/Charlie, thinkr.org. They summarize the key ideas from new and noteworthy nonfiction, giving you access to an entire library of great books. In bite-sized form, read or listen to hundreds of titles in a matter of minutes, from old classics like Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People to the recent bestsellers like Jordan Peterson's 12 Rules for Life. When I'm going for walks or when I'm riding on the bike, I always pop open thinker.org, thinkr.org, and I just try to learn something new every day. That's something we talk about here a lot on this Charlie Kirk Show, so make sure you guys do it. So if you want to challenge your preconceptions, expand your horizons, and become a better thinker, then go to thinker.org/Charlie. That's thinkr.org to start a free trial today. That's thinker.org, thinkr.org/Charlie.
This is your host for the day, Andrew Colvett, also known as Producer Andrew. It's always an honor to get to sit down with you guys and drive the show when Charlie's away. We are, like I said before, we are forcing him to take some time away. Lord knows he's earned it. And hopefully he's enjoying himself. So, you know, this is us sending out some good energy, some prayers that he will enjoy himself and that he'll come back refreshed and ready to do this. Anyways, we have, you know, we just had Jennifer Horn on the show. It was great. Jennifer Horn, host of The Morning Answer, AM 870 in Los Angeles, talking about California, what's going on there, but also kind of in a larger sense, what this media landscape is like. It's a very weird time we're all living through. And it feels like to many of us that because the media was so fixated on hating Donald Trump, they were so fixated on demonizing him every step he made, whether he did good things or bad things, whether he cured cancer, he was going to be attacked. We don't live in that era anymore, where studies have showed that Trump received between 90 and 95% negative news coverage. Biden is receiving probably about approximately 60% positive. I think it's even higher than that. Regardless, we are seeing a seismic shift in this nation just regarding the state of the government, the welfare state, the role of government. We're also seeing a changing in the public's perception of what the role of government should be. This is often taking the form and shape of massive spending plans from the Biden administration. Roughly $6.5 trillion in new spending has been proposed. They got $1.9 trillion of that through budget reconciliation. And we are living through inflation, whether or not Joe Biden wants to admit it or not. He's actually not admitting it. And he's saying that it's a lot of loose talk about an overheating economy. But again, what we're seeing is a massive increase in spending. This to me, I saw this come through this morning. I think it's probably the most terrifying new proposal from the Biden administration. And it's called the Department of National Child Care. And the Wall Street Journal editorial board had a great read on this morning. Mr. Biden wants to subsidize child care so families pay based on a sliding scale. For the most hard-pressed working families, the White House says costs would be fully covered with payments coming out of a $225 billion pot that Mr. Biden is asking Congress to fill. For the middle class, families earning 1.5 times their state median income will pay no more than 7% of their income. So this is actually Joe Biden creating an entirely new bureaucratic mess within the federal government called the Department of National Child Care. And they want to subsidize not just the most needy families to get child care. They want to subsidize everybody's child care. Now, this is interesting. This is on the one hand, this show has been loudly and proudly very pro-family. We want to empower families to have more kids, to get married. We, you know, this is something Charlie and I talk a lot about, is how does the conservative movement become so pro-family, so pro-marriage, so pro the institution of family that we can actually see sizable increases in our birth rate, native-born birth rate. Now, we're not talking about immigration. We're not talking about importing low-wage, low-skilled workers. We're not talking about keeping our porous border open to drug traffickers and sex traffickers and human smugglers. We're talking about Americans having babies. Now, we saw 500,000 fewer babies born in 2020 than in the previous year. All intents and purposes show that that is increasing. That's below the replacement level of births. So I on the one hand, so I think it's, you know, about 10 years ago, it was roughly at replacement level. We have now slid to about 1.6% for it. So every couple, it's two people, is only having 1.6 babies. That's not going to replace the current population. Now, that is a very troubling trend for a number of reasons, because it's an indication that your society is failing. It's no longer either culturally acceptable or financially possible to recreate yourself, to pass on your values and your DNA and your culture to the next generation. So it's a fire alarm. So on the one hand, I support making it easier for families to have more children and to make it more cost effective. But what they're doing is essentially universal daycare. And why this is so terrifying to me, and why I want to pause on this story for a little while, is because we have to think what's happening in our public schools. Now, most of this audience knows, but it bears repeating, that the most radical unions in this country very well are, or likely are, the teachers' unions. There's something, whether you call it selection bias, that these people that tend to lean left self-select into the teaching profession. That might be one of it, one of the causes. Whereas conservative-minded people tend to want to start businesses. They want to go into more capitalistic pursuits where they're not bound by government income. There's also the fact that these unions act like the mafia. These are essentially modern organized crime units in a lot of ways. Now, I know, listen, Media Matters, we rely on teachers. Many of us do. I get it. Nevertheless, there is a function within these unions that forces far left radical policies to take shape. In a lot of these teachers unions, we hear from them. A lot of you email the Charlie Kirk Show at freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Please send us your thoughts on this if you've experienced this type of bullying. But in order to advance within your teaching profession, there is a pressure placed on teachers to toe the line, to embrace these far left practices and policies like anti-racism, that America is based on systemic racist ideology, we're colonialist, that test scores and standardized testing is somehow racist. All of these ideas are being shoved through the teachers' unions right to your public schools through the mouthpieces of far-left radical teachers. And even the good teachers that are more moderate are feeling the pressure to toe the line. Now, there was a Supreme Court case called Janus, which made it illegal to force teachers to pay union dues. But what we found is that a lot of them still end up paying it. Why? Well, they either believe in the union, that it's protecting them, that it's doing a good job, or they feel coerced into doing it because if they're caught out as not supporting the union and paying the dues, then that might jeopardize their career. So what we see time and time again with the government when it gets involved in raising your children, when it gets involved in, basically involved in places where the family was preeminent, has always been the lead, it becomes a mechanism, a conduit for cultural indoctrination. So when I see that Joe Biden wants to subsidize universal health care, then I instantly, my eyes raise, because guess what? That means he's going to have one more conduit through a federally subsidized program to educate your children and to take your ability to raise your children out of your control. So there's actually a very interesting study that was done in Canada that showed that when you had two parent households, that where one would stay at home, most likely obviously the mother, but regardless, one parent was staying at home raising the children, and the Canadian government subsidized childcare, and that child was then shipped off to a third party to help raise it. Those children experienced higher levels of aggression. They became less social in actuality. So these are the data points that we're all working with. Now, this is what also is interesting, is that this incentive actually will – Mr. Biden envisions, sorry, I'm reading from the Wall Street Journal. Mr. Biden envisions more subsidies and cost inflation. His plan says providers, quote, will receive funding to cover the true cost of quality early childhood care. So you're going to get $15 an hour minimum wage for sure. And then caregivers who have a similar qualification as kindergarten teachers will receive comparable compensation. The Wall Street Journal concludes, this is a formula for bureaucratized national child care and enforced by federal rules and no doubt unionized. So we're going to get another union, we're going to get another government bureaucracy, and we're getting subsidized child care that will actually lower the level of child care for a lot of families, right? So it's forced mediocrity. So if you're a family that has means to send your child to child care that you prefer, you might choose to spend more. Well, what this is going to do is it's going to force the same system upon all parents. And the other problem is that it actually rewards parents that have their children closer together, and it will not reward people that have children further spaced apart. So it's just sort of, it's kind of a side note, but it's not equally applied. And that's problematic, because anything with the government, when the government gets involved, we know it has unintended consequences. But here's another problem with this Biden proposed bureaucracy. It will have the same perverse incentive effect that we have seen in higher education. So think about it. If all of this is guaranteed funding for this network of childhood care facilities, preschools, they have no incentive to keep costs low because the federal government will be subsidizing it. We've seen this with the university system. The university system gets guaranteed government grants. There's no incentive to compete on price, because those loans are going to be backed up by the federal government. There's no worry that the students will default, because if they default, the federal government's got the will be left holding the bag, and that really means you and me, the taxpayers. So here we are. We're about to take the same failed policy approach to universities. We're going to take that same approach to childcare, and we're going to see costs rise. We're going to see the federal price tag rise substantially, and we're going to see the quality of care go down. Folks, I'm going to play a clip here, clip 24 of J.D. Vance talking about this childcare issue, universal childcare, clip 24.
Well, I think it tells you that they care much more about the preferences of our ruling class elites than they do about the preferences of middle class Americans. If you look at poll after poll, it shows that the ruling class family model is just different from what middle class Americans want. The ruling class is obsessed with their jobs. Even though they hate a lot of their jobs, they're obsessed with their credentials, and they want strangers to raise their kids. But middle class Americans, whatever their station in life, they want more time with their children, even if they're working. They want the opportunity to spend more time with their kids and not be forced to send them to daycare. And so what this policy really represents is an effort to subsidize the preference of our ruling class over the preference of our middle and working classes. And
it's really good analysis from JD. Now, I remember JD Vance sent, so JD's a friend of the show. He's come on. He's actually hosted radio with us here for a few hours, not too long ago. JD's really smart about this topic. And I remember seeing this tweet where it went out. He said universal child care is a massive subsidy to the lifestyle preferences of the affluent over the preferences of the middle and working class. And he largely got dragged. I mean, it was one of those tweets that he put out there and people completely missed what he was actually getting at. So he got, as they say in Twitter lingo, that he got ratioed. So he had a bunch of people saying that he was, you know, tone deaf and out of touch because now he's, you know, well off because his book sold millions of copies or whatever. So I was really glad that he went on with Tucker Carlson and explained his perspective on this, because he's actually 100% right. What this does when you have the federal government get involved with teaching your children and prescribing the way you should go and saying this is the way you should go, this is the right answer, that everybody should put their kids into childcare. JD is 100% right. What that is doing is it is enforcing a worldview and a policy prescription that our elites tell us we should just blindly accept. Of course we should go to work and get our credentials and work 80 hours a week, not see our kids, not have hands-on time with our children, and let a stranger raise them. What does that stranger believe? What's that stranger's perspective on the way the world should work? Who cares? Stop asking questions. This is what's best for you. Now, the truth is that we need to be empowering parents. We need to be empowering families. We need to give if we're going to subsidize family formation, it should be in the form of tax incentives and credits for families to do what they see fit. Now, a side story that a lot of people are missing as well is AOC. She wants to create something called the Civilian Corps to battle climate change. It's a big, bold project. 1.5 million people she wants to enlist in this, inspired by an FDR program called the Civilian Conservation Corps. To fight climate change. Again, see what they're doing, folks. These are big, bold ideas. They are stretching the narrative. They're expanding this so that we're all used to these ideas, as if it's normal somehow to just spend trillions of dollars willy-nilly.
Look, by now you've all heard me talk about MyPillow and how Mike has done it again by introducing his My Slippers. Mike Lindell, he's got a lot of ambition. He's a patriot. He loves his country. A lot of people like Mike Lindell. In fact, I get emails from people. They say, Charlie, how can I help you? How can I help Mike Lindell? How can I help the country? Well, if you go to MyPillow.com and buy anything with the promo code Kirk, it helps both of us. That's right. Maybe you want to go buy the MyPillow slippers. They're beautiful slippers. Maybe you want to buy the MyPillow. MyPillow slippers are so comfortable that you want to get some for the whole family. So go to MyPillow.com and click on the radio listener square and use promo code Kirk. You'll also get deep discounts on MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream bedsheets, the MyPillow mattress toppers, and MyPillow towel sets. Or call 800-875-0425 and use promo code Kirk.
Folks, I want to bring you back to a story actually Charlie highlighted last week. This story just blew up. It went everywhere. There was a college, Cypress College in California, where the teacher was caught on a Zoom class, you know, video, and it was featuring student Braden Ellis, who'd just given a presentation on cancel culture, and the two of them had this back and forth about the role of police, and the professor obviously didn't like police so much, and Braden attempted, I think, very admirably to defend the role of police and the fact that they're heroes. So let's go ahead and play that clip really quick right now, clip 25, and we got some news on this.
I think cops are heroes, and they have to have a difficult job, but we have to have
all of them. Life.
Oh, I'd say a good majority of them. I do support our police, and we have bad people, and the people that do bad things should be brought to justice. I agree with that.
You're saying police officers should be revered, viewed as heroes?
I think they are heroes in a sense, because they come to your need and they come and help you.
They're actually supposed to protect and serve the people.
They do protect us. Who do we call when we're in trouble and someone has a knife or a gun?
I would call the police.
Why wouldn't you call the police?
I don't trust them. My life's in more danger.
Who would you call?
In their presence.
Professor, who would you call?
I wouldn't call anybody.
Oh, my gosh. This is who's teaching your children, by the way. Very exciting when they get exposed like this. So now this teacher's been exposed. And I can tell you that we were very curious about who the identity of this teacher was last week. Turning Point USA runs something called Professor Watch List, which, you know, it's a living trigger warning for the left. The Professor Watch List, I've never seen anything like it. It's just they hate it so much. But all it is a database of far left radical professors and teachers that have been caught or revealed or proudly espouse their radical ideas to the world. Using confirmed reporting, they compile a Professor Watch List database. Again, this is all third party confirmed. So you get reported in this paper or that paper, or you proudly publish something. It's all publicly available information. It just makes it easily accessible for parents and teachers that might want to send their kids to a university or college, and they want to know who's teaching their children. All right. So we wanted to put this professor on the watch list because obviously she's a radical. So the story has taken on a new wrinkle because the identity of the teacher has been exposed. It is Fariha Salim. Okay. Now, this faculty member has been put on leave, apparently, in order to protect her, I guess. So I'm reading from insidehighered.com, leftist rag, whatever. So this is how it describes it. And the faculty members and some associations in North Orange County are very upset about the behavior of the university, which I think is laughable. But let's just get into it. Faculty members at Cypress College and across California's North Orange County Community College District are urging administrators to publicly support a Muslim professor targeted for how she interacted with a student. So I'm not sure what her being a Muslim has to do with anything, but apparently that's worth noting. The student, who is white, again, not sure what that has to do with anything, but they're bringing it up, said police officers are heroes and the professor appeared to disagree. Their debate made national headlines after it was uploaded to the internet. This is a quote from the union. A university faculty stands, oh, this is from the faculty, stands in solidarity with all our faculty in protecting their academic freedom and the right to a safe work environment free of hostility and threats to their physical safety and emotional well-being. The district's full-time faculty union said in a statement last week, we request a strong and clear public statement in support of all faculty and their right to a safe workplace and their ability to exercise their academic freedom. So this is all coming down, and then you got the Latino Faculty and Staff Association coming out in solidarity. Fariha Salim, the professor, made her own statement on the matter, and she said, the district has failed to protect me and allowed radicalized and gendered attacks against – again, not sure what happens – what any of this has to do with her being Muslim or apparently a woman. I'm assuming that's how she self-identifies. You never know with this crowd. Gendered attacks against me. Cypress College, this is bananas. Cypress College suspended all in-class learning as a result of this incident. So they sent everybody back to Zoom class, which is, again, not sure what that has to do with anything. But apparently, this is leftist logic at play. Very weird. So the whole debate, again, it was about this police reform, and they're calling this the thin Zoom line. And so they're now taking this to, because of everything that's happened with the pandemic, a lot of classes obviously have become Zoom classes. And this incident is not unique. A lot of students that have seen radicalized professors are now having a new avenue to expose them, i.e. recording the Zoom call and sharing it with people in the media or just posting it online or whatever. And now Faria Saleem is the newest professor that's been exposed. And I'm glad she's been exposed. Some of the things she was saying are terrible. And the fact that she's a Muslim and a woman has nothing to do with any of this. Or at least I think that's how she believes herself. She identified. I don't want to assume her pronouns. So they're saying that it's a failure of the school to be anti-racist. Joe Biden wants to create a new bureaucratic mess where universal child care is now going to be offered. And we talked about how this is a prescription for more ideological indoctrination of your students. We've got AOC wanting to create something akin to the Civilian Conservation Corps with 1.5 million, probably recent grads, for the Civilian Climate Corps to battle climate change with federal projects. And again, what do you think they're going to be learning if we have 1.5 million young Americans going into civilian climate corps? They're going to be indoctrinated. They're going to be fed one prescription for the problems facing the world, and that they're going to be told it's an existential threat. That climate change must be dealt with, and then all of our modern world should be deconstructed and revolutionized in order to confront the threat. And you've got teachers like this teaching your students. She was obviously aggressive, saying that that the cops are basically terrible, that she wouldn't even call the police if she was getting attacked with a gun or a knife, that she would feel less safe with a police officer nearby than she would if there was an attacker assailing her with a gun or a knife, which is obviously crazy in Looney Tunes. And yet now she has the gall to attack the university for saying that it's a failure to be anti-racist. Now, this is something that we have talked about a lot on this show, and I want to delve deeper into it. I want to get exactly into the core of what anti-racism is, and I want you, everybody in this audience, to be equipped and understand that when people tell you to be anti-racist, they are actually the racist. They are actually saying you need to be more racially motivated. You need to see everything through the lens of color and of skin tone, and I have proof that I'm right. Anti-racism is the most racist ideology that is percolating through our institutions, and it's dangerous to this nation, this republic.
It doesn't matter what your politics are or who you voted for. Everyone should have the right to express themselves freely. Sadly, the big tech monopoly has instead opted for censorship. To fight back against big tech's control of the internet, I use ExpressVPN. Free-to-access tech giants make all of their money by tracking your searches, video history, and everything you click on, then selling off your sensitive data. When you use the ExpressVPN app on your computer or phone, you anonymize much of your online presence by hiding your IP address. That makes your activity much more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. What's more, ExpressVPN encrypts 100% of your network's data to protect you from cybercriminals, and it just takes one click to protect all your devices. That's why ExpressVPN... That's right, ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired. Revoke big tech's right to your data. Visit expressvpn.com/Kirk, ExpressVPN.com/Kirk to get 3 extra months free. That's expressvpn.com/Kirk for 3 extra months free. ExpressVPN.com/Kirk.
We have been talking a lot about our schools. We've been talking a lot about different vectors by which the left is attempting to indoctrinate our children. And there is new news today that's putting some further definition around the Department of National Child Care, this new bureaucratic boondoggle that Biden is proposing, which is another government agency that wants to take care of your children, that wants to force you and actually subsidize your family to accept mediocre child care. And as J.D. Vance said, this is our ruling class elites attempting to tell middle class Americans the way that they should raise their children. Then you've got AOC suggesting that we need a 1.5 million person strong climate federally paid for climate army that fights climate change. Very disturbing. And then we have the tale out of Cypress College in California, with the professor who now has a name that we know. The professor is Faria Salim, who is now claiming that Cypress College has failed to be sufficiently anti-racist in its defense of her. Well, that begs the question, what is anti-racism? How can you be anti-racist? And what happens if you're not? So, again, this was a simple interaction between Braden Ellis and this professor, Faria Salim. She's an adjunct instructor of communications. This article that we were just reading went out of its way to explain that she's Muslim and that she's receiving gendered attacks. Now, I don't know what gender they're attacking her for. It doesn't say, because it would probably be rude of this article to assume she was cisgendered, which is just – I'm not even going to say that again because I don't want to – I don't accept the premise. There are men and there are women. There are boys and girls. Everything else is just silly leftist propaganda. Okay. Ibram X. Kendi. This is a name that you guys have to get through your heads. It is a name that's important. Why? Because this is the single largest purveyor of racism, perhaps with Patrice Concolors, in our nation today. He was not born Ibram X, by the way. He was born Ibram Henry Rogers. His philosophy of anti-racism is a Manichean concept. Basically, that means it's an either-or. It's a binary choice in which the world is bifurcated into racist and anti-racist. So what are you guys probably listening to the show? You guys are probably the racist, according to Ibram X. Kendi. He thinks that racists should be treated as a plain descriptive term for policies and ideas that create or justify racial inequalities, not a personal attack. Someone is being racist when he or she endorses a racist idea or policy. So he doesn't even think that not racist is a category. This is how the Washington Post summarizes his view like this. All policies, even the most trivial, are either racist or anti-racist. They support equity. That's that word that you always need to be on the lookout. You see equity instead of equality, you know it's cultural Marxism, okay? Quick cheat sheet there. A do-nothing approach to climate change is racist because climate change overwhelmingly affects people of color. Forgiving student debt and offering universal health care would be anti-racist. Why? Not because it's communist, but because people of color are more likely to have student debt or lack health care. So those policies would lessen, if not erase, those inequalities. Yeah, they wouldn't, by the way. So here's some other things that X. Kendi deems racist. Standardized tests. Yeah. Which he calls the most effective racist weapon ever devised to objectively degrade black minds and legally exclude their bodies. I'm not even sure what he's talking about with their bodies. What a standardized test has to do with that. But the point is, this is now the prevalent ideology that's pervading our nation's schools. And this goes all the way down to elementary school. And yes, definitely preschool. And we will see that if Biden gets his way with this Department of National Child Care, which is just ridiculous.
In 1857, the SS Central, also known as the Gold Ship, sank with 9.1 tons of gold on board. Valued at $2.1 million, that is the modern-day equivalent to hundreds of millions of dollars, the greatest American treasure ever discovered at sea. Today, Noble Gold, a California-based company with a pristine reputation, has a share of these coins available to their clients. Over 7,000 gold coins, mostly $1, $5, and $20, gold coins from 1840 to 1857 were recovered from the SS Central America shipwreck. Most of these coins were from the Ship of Gold, were quickly acquired by private collectors when the coins were first brought to the market in 2000. Now Noble Gold's clients can get this unforgettable part of American history at a fair, affordable valuation. Contact Noble Gold and ask about the Kirk Shipwreck deal. To receive this unique offer, visit noblegoldinvestments.com and then call a Noble Gold representative to ask about the shipwreck coins. It's time to tell better stories at your parties by showcasing a one-of-kind coins from collection destined to rise in value, noblegoldinvestments.com.
So we've been talking about how Joe Biden wants to raise your kids. It's a very troubling thing. Now, we're missing sort of two really big aspects of this story. One is that they already are awful at this. And this is what's genuinely perplexing about this whole moment that we're living in, is that The left and Democrats, blue states in particular, have been so awful at educating our children that there are still many people that are still not going to school. There was a report in the LA Times that just came out that said only 7% of students are going back to school. Why? Because there's only 3 hours of in-person education. And guess what? Most of those teachers are still teaching via Zoom. So you're just going into a physical space where you have to be socially distanced, wear masks, be uncomfortable. And there's still only going to be a teacher on a Zoom lesson, right? This thin Zoom line that we're talking about at Cypress College. It's happening all over the school districts, right? So at various school districts, they have various rules. It's hard to keep track of all of them. But they are absolutely awful at this. And it's having an impact on our economy, and we're missing that. So they're terrible at this already, and yet they want to double down, take more of our taxpayer money and double and triple down on it, spend even more, force even more of us into government-controlled educational systems where they already have, in many places, a monopoly, which is part of the problem. But listen to this. Let's go to clip 7. ABC reports that school closures has actually caused 165,000 women to leave the workforce. Clip 7.
The problem is that as women decide that they need to stay home either to take care of family members, particularly children who aren't in school, they're not going to be looking for jobs and they won't be reflected in the unemployment statistics.
Now, more than 2 million women have dropped out of the workforce. Another 165,000 left just last month. An untold number still struggling with the balance.
So I can't tell if this is a bad thing or a good thing. Like on the one hand, I look at this report and I go, you know what? That's terrible. If these women want to work, hey, we're pro families make their own decisions, right? If you're a family and you got children and you want to work as a mom, we're cool with that. If you don't want to work as a mom, we're cool with that too. And so what we're seeing is that Democratic policies are actually having an adverse effect on women that want to work because their schools still aren't open. And if your schools aren't open, the parents are forced to remain at home and be the primary child care giver. And so I can't tell because I think that maybe is a good thing. So more women at home, according to this report, is actually probably going to have some adverse or some positive unexpected consequences. Now, everybody, I hope you guys are aware of this, that we missed our jobs report number by 750,000 jobs on Friday. That came out. Big story, big swing and a miss, massively terrible jobs report. And now let's get into it. Biden's own Commerce Secretary, Gina Raimondo, admits that it's the failure to open schools that's having a big impact on the jobs report. Go ahead. Clip 8.
Is there a particular friction to women getting back into the workforce that you've seen that makes this recovery particularly difficult for women?
Yes, absolutely. So first of all, women are clustered in the industries that were hit the most. But the reality is, as you say, you know, women are more likely to be the caretakers. So lack of affordable child care hits women the hardest. The fact that schools were closed and many still remain closed hits women harder.
That's right. So the fact that schools remain closed hits women harder. And yet we are going to be entrusting the same bureaucrats, the same policymakers that have kept the schools closed, even when it runs against science, and it has, by the way, for months and months and months, we've known that kids can safely return back to school. And yet these teachers' unions have held your children hostage, forcing a lot of women to stay out of the workforce. And yet the Democrats' prescription moving forward is to take even more of your money, force even more of your children into mandated state programs so that they can taught to be anti-racist, which, as we have just covered, is probably the most racist thing you can be. And I do want to finish this with Ibram X. Kendi and some of this garbage that he's spewing. This is what's so infuriating. They're bad at this. They always have been bad at this. Their ideas don't work, and yet they want to double and triple down on them and force more of us into this government subjugation. I cannot stand idiots that think that they get to have more power. Listen to this idiot. capitalism, according to Ibram X. Kendi, who gave himself that name. By the way, I listen, if any of you are people of faith and you've read the Bible, you understand that God used to give people names when they had a conversion experience. Saul became Paul. Abram became Abraham. There is a bestowing of a new righteousness on people in biblical terms. And yet what we're seeing in this is almost like sort of this perverse reversal where somebody like Ibram, Henry Rogers gives himself a name, Ibram X. Kendi. Frankly, you see that with Bruce Jenner to Caitlyn Jenner too, but that's for another podcast. It's for another episode. So listen, what he thinks here is capitalism, which Kendi refers to as a conjoined twin of racism. Kendi states that the origin of capitalism cannot be separated from the origins of racism, citing colonialism and slavery. I wonder if he ever mentions the fact that actually slavery existed in Africa, and actually some of the slave trading that happened in a transatlantic sense, which we all abhor and think is terrible, was actually empowered in a lot of ways because of slavery that happened in Africa. But that, you know, I digress. He suggests that capitalism is a racist by dubiously questioning if markets were ever level playing fields between the races and whether blacks could ever compete equally with whites in the marketplace. So you see what he's doing here. Ibram X. Kendi's anti-racism is actually the bigotry of low expectation. He's saying the blacks could never compete on this playing field, which is not true, by the way. Plenty of black business owners are doing phenomenally well. And actually, under the Trump economy, the black unemployment level was at record lows. Here's one of my favorites. The broad American desire for a race-neutral country, Kendi describes as the most threatening racist movement and one more dangerous than the alt-right's unlikely drive for a white ethno-state. Okay, so if I see you as just a person, I am now a racist. If I don't see you as a black American or a Latino American, Latinx, whatever the heck that is, then I'm the racist. So assimilation, you see, is now a terribly white concept that you should assimilate to this culture because you're American and because all Americans share one culture, more broadly speaking. That's now a racist idea. And so what they're doing is actually forcing a form of tribalism on all Americans that is incredibly disruptive. Out of many, one is being replaced with anti-racism. Do you see what they're doing there? It sounds fun. Sounds nice. Be an anti-racist. Well, of course, I don't want to be racist. And no American does want to be racist. Actually, the fact that they are using racism as a cudgel, as the worst thing that you can call somebody in America, is actually a compliment to the progress that we have made as this country. And what they're doing is saying, well, we know that you're sensitive to that. We know that that's the worst thing we can call you. So we're just going to call all of you that all the time, even if it's true, even if it's not true. So do you see that point that I'm making? Is that America fought a bloody civil war. We have struggled through the civil rights era. We've passed historic legislation. There is more freedom here than anywhere else in the world. I genuinely affirm and believe, and will do so time and again, as long as we have this show to do it, that America is the most generous, accepting, benevolent nation that has ever lived. That is why the caravans come up one way and they don't go the other way. That's why the boats from Cuba come this way and not the other way. That's why close to 3 million African immigrants have come to the United States in the last three decades. And by the way, the Nigerians are performing exceptionally well. Nigerian immigrants actually make per capita more than white Americans. Asians, most of the subgroups of Asian immigrants, the same is true there. Indians as well. Well, I guess it's a subgroup of Asian, but it often is often placed as a subcategory. The point I'm making here, folks, is that assimilation has long been looked at as a good thing, the melting pot, that all of these ingredients come from all over the world. They blend together. They create the fabric of the American culture based upon the rule of law, based upon a justice system that treats everybody equally, There is no class, no race. Dr. Larry Arnn from Hillsdale College put it brilliantly on one of his lectures that the first settlers of the United States from Europe, they brought with them all of these Western ideas about rule of law from the Magna Carta, some of the onwards. Brought with them some of the most powerful ideas ever to be exposed to the human race. But one thing they didn't bring with them, and that was the aristocracy. And so for 150 years, upon the first boats landing on the eastern seaboard to the Declaration of Independence, the first Americans of European descent, sure, the Westerners that came in, had this experiment to wrestle with what did it mean to start fresh, to start new. How do you bring all of these different people that were landing here, how do you bring them together under one system of government, under one national identity, especially when they had, when the states carried so much of the identity back then? People were much more likely to connect with their state as opposed to the nation. And as it was forming, as it was wrestling, the one thing they didn't have to contend with that the Europeans did was the aristocracy. There was this level playing field for all. And we have seen this inheritance. At least it was imperfect. I understand it was imperfect. Nothing was perfect on this planet. It wasn't completely level playing field. But it was, in as much as it could be true, it was true here. And we saw that beautiful heritage extended to all peoples at this imperfect nation, as we've struggled to be more perfect, has allowed more and more different peoples to enjoy those same blessings. And you have people like Ibram X. Kendi and this professor at Cypress College reversing that beautiful gift we've all been given. We've been talking about how Biden wants to teach your children why that's a bad thing. Of course it's a bad thing. These people want to indoctrinate your children. It's a long history of tyrants and despots separating parents from their children so that we can't give our values to the next generation. We can't replicate our values in the next generation, which is perhaps the biggest deal of all the deals. It's the, you know, you hear the left talk about climate change is an existential threat. You hear them talking about systemic racism is an existential threat. Well, here's the good news. It's not working. It's failing with voters. And this is an article from Zaid Jilani this morning. I saw it and I was like, thank God. Thank God there's some actual evidence to support what we all intuitively kind of assume is that how could anybody fall for this? So you're hearing people like Representative Jamal Bowman from New York. He's one of these radical representatives. He's basically a part of the squad, but he's got elected in this last election, and so he's newer. Anyways, he says, just like Ibram X. Kendi, you know, I want to start calling him by his given name just to like frustrate him. I think we should just do that. What was it again? It is Ibram Henry Rogers. The fraud, basically spewing that same stuff. He says standardized testing is a pillar of systemic racism and that student debt relief is racial justice. So they're framing everything in these terms now, folks. So just be very aware anytime you hear a leftist use the word justice, because it's probably anything but. So Yale University researchers Josh Kalla and Micah English recently explored in a working paper that tested various types of messaging to promote progressive policies. So they've been doing this for years, but they figured, what the heck, we're going to do it again because, you know, the country has shifted dramatically. They took six different policies, progressive policies, $15 minimum wage, forgiving $50,000 in student loan debt, the Green New Deal, Medicare for all, upzoning housing, and decriminalizing marijuana and erasing prior convictions. And then they asked people if they supported them. What they did is they approached it in three ways, one based on class, one based on race, and one based on race and class. And what they found was surprising. They found that the class frame was generally more effective than either the race framing or the race plus class frame. So this is very counterintuitive if you're a liberal elitist on the left. You would think, oh, well, listen, all my friends pat me on the back when I talk about systemic racism. Of course, it's very provocative and compelling, and everybody's just awed by it and convinced instantly. Well, turns out that's not even true. And guess what? It's not even true for Black Americans. Something really important that we found is that the race appeal and the class appeal are about just as effective for Black voters, English said. speculating that these voters tend to be more pragmatic in their political approach. This is the kicker. Interestingly, English and Calla found one group that was slightly receptive to the race framing. And I bet all of you listening can guess who. It was white Democrats. White Democrats were the only group that were more compelled when you talked about racial issues. Everybody else preferred about class. What is it in for me? How does this policy affect the bottom line? But guess who wasn't? White liberals. That's right. White liberals have become the most racist people on planet Earth, along with Ibram X. Kendi or Ibram Henry Rogers. Folks, it's all a ruse. They just want to be patted on the back at the cocktail parties and impress their cohort, their liberal elite cohort that's trying to tell you how to raise your kids. Don't fall for it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We hope you got a lot out of that episode. I know I certainly did. I learned a lot studying for it. So please don't let your children fall victim to the indoctrination of the left. Let's empower parents, not the bureaucracy, okay? Support and defend the family. That is the mission of this show. Guys, if you want to support the show, like I said at the beginning, go to charliekirk.com/support. We encourage you to do that. We appreciate it. You make us strong and you make us independent. And you help us avoid any of those boycotts, the troublesome boycotts that plague so many on the right. Thank you, guys. We'll see you next time.